Hi, welcome to Wandering Into the Woods, a podcast brought to you by the creators of Adventures with BG. I'm Linda.
And this is Jarrett.
And today we'll be talking to you about day two of our Sakantai Santa Teresa trip. And it's actually one of the most exciting days because it's the first day, or it's actually the day that we actually cross the Sakantai Pass.
For this day, you start out at Soraya Pampa again. It's where you camped that night before. And you go all the way to Golcapampa or possibly Cayapampa. So one of those. They've got it listed as both on the website. It's also going to be your longest day and your highest elevation day by a significant margin. So expect to walk 13 and a half miles or 21 kilometers. You'll also reach the height of 15,255 feet. Or 4,650 meters, and that is actually at the pass itself. You'll go through the Salkantay Pass. You'll be able to see Salkantay Peak off to your right as you go through. It's also going to be about 11 hours from village to village, so be prepared for a long day. The very first part is pretty steep going up, and the back end is definitely steep going down when you get over the pass, and then it kind of levels out. So you go from kind of an extreme high altitude with not much but like grass and small bushes, and then you work your way down into like the cloud forest, which is part of the rainforest. But, you know, you're high up, but you're inside the actual clouds some of the time.
So this is the first morning we're waking up, and the first thing your tour guide the night before is going to tell you what time everybody is leaving. I don't remember if they had like a wake-up call for everybody or if you were just left to your own devices if you wanted to wake up before, like how much earlier you wanted to wake up to prep before everybody took
off.
Do you
something.
Remember? Yeah.
They do something like leave hot water out and like tea for you in the morning,
morning. Oh, yeah. So that was really nice to wake up to. Yeah.
They kind of like say, hey, here's your tea.
Yeah.
And I guess you don't have to wake up, but I don't know what else you would do.
Yeah. It's a really nice, gentle wake up. You hear everybody moving around and stuff. So everybody... has gotten up and you take care of yourself, what you're going to need for the day and your bag. Make sure to pack up the stuff that the porters are going to carry. Remember, you're limited to 8 pounds for them to carry. Everything else you're going to have to carry. So everybody gets their stuff ready. We put it all like kind of like in the center area for the porters. Mm-hmm. And we also put our own backpacks that we're going to take with us in another area just to have it ready for us to pick up as we leave. And then we all go get breakfast, and they serve you really, they give you good options, several options, but including vegetarian. I'm partial to lighter breakfast, so I took advantage of their awesome, amazing porridge and coffee. Jared, I don't know, what do you remember eating the most?
I don't remember. I just remember that they had the liquid oatmeal porridge stuff.
Yeah, but they have other options, like mm-hmm. including eggs and sometimes, and I don't remember. I wish I could remember better. Yeah. I just remember really appreciating the warm breakfast that morning. And then you grab your bags and you start going on your journey. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the longest day. So, Jared, do you remember what it was like starting out?
I just remember it being, you know, still kind of dark, somewhat cloudy. You know, and as you go up higher, there's less vegetation. So, it gets less green and starts turning brown over time. It's pretty rocky. This is also one of the first areas that, you know, your porters and your mule trains come through. So they also help keep things like beat down, but also rocky and rugged.
Right, right. And actually, as you know, like Jarrett mentioned, this is an area, especially in the morning, where we are doing a steep climb up to the pass. And that's going to be the highest point we're going to reach. Jared and I were doing fine. I had been taking my medication for altitude sickness, and I had taken a few days to acclimate as well. But one of our trek mates, this is what we would call her, right? I'm not sure what to call her, but one of our companions on this trip experienced altitude sickness, and it was interesting to see because I had, if you remember back to our Rainbow Mountain episode, I had just experienced altitude sickness a few days beforehand. So I think it was Jared, actually, because Jared was staying behind with me. Jared could always get ahead or behind the group, but Jared was behind with me because I was, as usual, one of the slowest ones. And he started noticing, hey, we have this really good hiker who, she's very athletic and was usually doing really well, but she started to kind of slow down. And I don't know what made Jarrett notice, but she, you know, he was like, I think she's getting altitude sickness. And so we kept an eye on her. And sure enough, she at some point sat down and she was experiencing the same symptoms I had experienced, which was confusion. The group had kind of split up at that point. We had some people who were eager to get to the top. And so they had gotten quite ahead of us. And so, and along with the tour guide, so Jarrett being so amazing and considerate and also very athletic, went while I stayed with her, he went and got the tour guide and told him that, hey, we have somebody suffering from altitude sickness. Jarrett, what do you want? Like, what was that? What happened then?
Well, I mean, the section of trail we were on, so it's, you can do splits. There's kind of a road that you can take, or you can actually take the trail. And our tour guide wanted us to have the full experience. So we took the trail part. The road is mainly for the porters and the pack mules. So it's a little more flat, wider, not quite as treacherous. So the part we were on is definitely very treacherous as far as it being steep and switchbacky and rocky and, you know, loose dirt. But I don't know. Once I went up to grab our tour guide, it was just going up that as quickly as possible. So, you know, steep. I want to say they were kind of waiting at the top of that section where it kind of smoothed out for a little bit.
That sounds right to me.
So once I hustled up that, I was able to find him and he went back. I don't remember if I went back. Did I go back too?
Yeah, you
I
came
went
back. Yeah, you came back.
And, you know, he started doing his thing where he gave her, you know, oxygen, and she may have had her own altitude sickness medicine at that point because I know she had it. So she may have taken it. And that's when we continued on our way and kind of left him to do his work.
Yeah, and he got her on a horse.
So we went up, we caught up to the rest of the group, and everyone waited for quite a bit till I went on the other side to that dirt path and was watching him. And that's when our guide saw us, and he's like, hey, go up to the next lake. So he gave us our instructions.
Yeah.
And so that's when we continued on. And being able to look back, we didn't know how it was going to go, but
right.
He ended up getting her on a horse or a mule.
Well, and we had been told ahead of time there's going to be this medic horse or emergency horse in case somebody has altitude sickness. So that was really nice that we did have it because it ended up being that we did need it.
Yeah.
So that was really nice. And she ended up joining us at the pass and she was a lot better. Like, you know, once you start feeling better, getting your bearings, it's you feel the same. I guess I don't know how to explain it otherwise, other than you just get all the oxygen back and you're fine again. So we were all able to enjoy the being at the pass and took a couple of pictures. It's super, guys, I just remember it being a lot of gray, like gray all around us, Jarrett, except for the sky. But it's like barren and dead. It's not even,
you're up too high, so.
Ice, yeah. So it's just like the grayest rocks I've ever seen.
Yeah, so there's also snow, so there's white. And you can look out and see green in the distance, but there's a line at all altitudes and or elevation where things stop growing. And so we were at that point. And that's why. It's also fairly windy because it's a pass in the mountains, you know, so wind just gets channeled through there.
Yes, and at this point, I was borrowing a lot of clothes from Jarrett, I was wearing like two or three shirts and sweaters. And so there's a few pictures of us and Jarrett's like only wearing his adventure shirt and a scarf. And here I am like in two or three sweaters. I don't know why I didn't have my jacket ready that day.
But up in the pass, it's another spot where everyone has to take another obligatory picture. So you take it with your group. And then if you're like in a couple or a smaller group inside of your tour group, you'll also take those pictures. So there can be a little bit of a line. The cool spot is to take it by the actual pass, Salkantay Pass sign, which gives you the elevation. There's also like another big rock that people like to get on and have a picture taken where it shows the background behind you of where you're walking. I guess you could spin around and do it the other way too. But I mostly saw people, you know, taking the picture with the trip ahead to their back and then, you know, smiling for the camera. So could be waits. There wasn't really a long wait for us. Other than we were trying to take a group picture, some random guy kept like trying to take his own pictures. I don't know if you remember that.
No, I don't.
And we kept talking about him, but like we slowly bullied him out of the way using our power as a group. But like we were up there and he got up there too to take pictures. And so we just kept like getting closer and inching him out of the way.
I think we gave him a few chances to, you know, take his pictures. It's just that
it was just holding up the line.
Yeah. Well, no, he was up on the rock with us. So we all started getting up there and he got up with us for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I remember him being like in an orange jacket or shirt as well.
Super awkward.
Yeah. And so we slowly just kind of had to group bully him out of the way.
Yeah.
So we got our pictures. Then we headed down. You know, you're still up high. It's steep. You'll need your walking sticks, but you should have been using them already to go up as well.
Yeah.
And then this is kind of where, you know, that road that I talked about and the trail converge once you get past the pass. So you will start experiencing porters and mule trains coming through. So be prepared for that. But for a little while until you start getting down into the forest, you're still up really high. So things are still rocky, sparse vegetation. And as you start going down, there's a stream that starts forming. So it'll get bigger and you'll parallel that for a while. I mean, for the entire time. But
yeah, and because you're in an area with no vegetation, there's a lot of dust and you're with all the porters, et cetera, a lot of horses coming around and mules. And so one, if you're a person with allergies, this day two is a day you would want to take your Zyrtec D or something to help relieve your allergies. Be aware of that. I didn't do that and I paid the price for that 2 days later. And also keep, you know, safety first, be aware of your surroundings and everything that's going on around you. We, like I said, there's you have to make way for horses sometimes and mules. And so we did that at some point, and I noticed this horse was kind of nervous, and it basically did not follow the rest of its pack, the rest of the herd, and decided to go out of the way for some reason. And out of the way was towards me. And fortunately, I managed to move just in time. He did manage to... knock me over with his stomach, but I was all right. And I think the horse was all right too. And it was just, you know, kind of like, you know, oh shoot, there's a horse coming straight at me. I moved out of the way, but I just wasn't as fast as the horse. And he still managed to hit me with his stomach. But, you know, it was just kind of those moments where I was knocked down to the ground, but butt first. And then I just remember thinking, whew, that was close.
Yeah,
and
well, you only went down a little bit because you were like next to a rock. So you yeah. only, you
so
only
it wasn't
were knocked
much.
Down. No, you were only knocked down to sitting position.
Yeah, I just remember landing on my butt and thinking, well, that was close. And then being just so amazed so that I was so lucky. And then just kept, you know, it was a little surreal. And then we just kept going.
Yeah. But dealing with those pack trains, if you come into contact with them, my tip is to get at least 3 foot away from where they're going, or if you can get up onto something. So if there's like a rock that's like waist high or taller that you can scramble up on, because they don't particularly want to climb. That's not what horses and mules are made for.
Well,
so.
And that's what was odd about this horse, because I did follow that advice. It was just a random horse that just...
It's because it was a traffic jam. He got pinned in, so he jumped over something, and you just happened to be on the other side of that. But I don't think you were up out of the way.
I was trying to. I don't know. Like you said, it gets really narrow sometimes, so it's not like sometimes you have limited options. Mm-hmm. So just be aware of your surroundings and everything that's going around.
Yeah, and try and scramble up onto something. Mm-hmm. You'll be a lot safer that way.
And so we kept walking along, and like Jared said, at some point you reach a rainforest, and it's just so bizarre because you're coming up from up high and you're seeing clouds beneath you, like in ahead. And you know, if you're a city person, like I think Jared and I are, you know, actually my first thought was, oh, like that's a lot of smoke, that's a lot of fog. And I'm like, wait a minute, we're out in the middle of kind of nowhere, and these must be clouds. And sure enough, it was. It's the rainforest. I just was, you know, it's my first exposure to it like that.
I think they call it specifically the cloud forest.
Yeah.
And one of the pictures I took either that morning or that night before is looking back from our campsite, and there's like clouds below the peaks, and it almost looks like water, but it's not. It's cloud. So it's kind of a weird effect.
Yeah. And as you're walking through it, it's pretty smooth walking. It was a nice chance to get to talk to some of our fellow hikers and get to know them a little bit. So it was just a nice, easy break, you know, on a long day that we have.
With this, as you go down, the valley starts getting more narrow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where your trail is. You know, the sides will get steeper. It's pretty wide up after the Salkantay Pass and kind of grasslands-ish. You know, as that stream starts to gain water and things, it, you know, it goes down lower than you. much deeper in the valley because it's the one, you know, doing all the work creating it. And you get steeper. This is also the section where the tour guide says that you can see wildlife. They mention being able to see, toucans is it possible? So, you know, a cool bird like the cereal. You can also see Andean foxes, some deer, and then chinchilla-like rabbits called visacas. Also the chance to see hummingbirds and flowers. We saw flowers. I don't remember really seeing any wildlife. There may have been like a lizard or something or a couple of insects I saw. But for the most part, I think it was trafficked enough that everything could, you know, skirt away and knows not to go in that area. Yeah. So your best chance, I guess, would to see is if you were able to see down over the edge down to the stream where, you know, animals are going to get water. So that's probably the best bet if you need to see wildlife.
Is this where some of our where we got to see the wild llamas for the first time?
I don't remember seeing wild llamas.
That's what one of our trek mates stated.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that they remembered that. But I don't remember if it was on day two. I think it sounded like day two.
Possibly. Yeah. I didn't think any wild llamas were a thing.
Yeah.
Unless they were like the horses that we have here in the U.S. where they just get wild and become feral.
I would imagine.
So I wonder if they're just feral llamas. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, it was, I'm trying to remember everything. Obviously, it was over a year ago. And I remember it being physically challenging. I feel the morning was more challenging than the afternoon, probably because the afternoon is going downhill. You also have some areas that are more flat, so that kind of gives you a break in between. Mm-hmm. And we end up the evening in Colcapampa or Colpampampa. We're not sure which one it is.
Yeah, I've got listed a couple of times.
And that's the campsite for night two. And this is more one of the more bigger villages, I think. I remember, if I remember correctly, right, Jared?
I don't remember that. But can we go back a little bit?
Okay.
So there's also, this is the day where you have a lot of small footbridges. So if you're into crossing the stream on footbridges.
Yes.
You could do that. Also, on our trip, I don't know if it's like that, going to be like that for your trip. But as you get real close to Colcapampa, there is a log that you can take that'll speed up your trek by a few minutes.
Oh my God. And yeah.
So we all went across it. Luna's got a picture of me running across it. But yeah, so that's the opportunity if you're a thrill seeker, I guess you can do that. So that was, I guess, you know, kind of a unique experience.
Right. Right.
And that's right on the outskirts of town. Could still be there. Could not, you know, a year later, who knows?
So once we arrived at our campsite, I was relieved to find that there was, you could pay a high dollar price. I don't remember how much for for internet, basically.
Yeah.
And I think I just got the minimum so that I could call my parents and let them know that everything was fine. I'm a true crime fan, as I've stated before. So for me, it's always important to stay in touch with my loved ones and people that I know are looking out for me. So I wanted them to know, hey, Jared and I are okay, as far as you know, for this day. So for documentation purposes, we're good. And there was an area, there was also like a shower area, which is nothing fancy, but it does the job. But
all those who took showers.
Yeah. And it was like, the water was very hot, which is like, you thought at first, oh no, it'll be fine. But no, the way the situation is set up, it's not ideal. So, make sure you did take some flip flops for the situation. And, but it was nice. It was nice to wash off and dry off. And, we got to relax that evening with some good dinner. And some good drinks.
So the village itself, it's actually a lot more of a village than the first night, which is kind of just like random campsites spread over a big, wide, flat area. There's actually houses and probably some shops here. There was some big soccer game going on. I don't remember what happened, who was playing, but some of the members of our party and our tour guide were interested. And I believe they had some beers to celebrate and or watch it. Also, this is one of the cooler locations for dinner. It has like a covered area, but it's two stories. So it's just kind of a structure, but you go up and it has a table so you can kind of look out over the valley and see lights and, you know, just the valley itself while you eat dinner. Even though it's fairly dark, it's still a very good scene. While everyone else was taking showers, that's actually what I did. I spent a lot of time up there just kind of looking out and admiring the area and nature. And so it's, I guess, as you move through, it's one of the more built up settlements for camp. And it seems the trend is every night you camp in a more and more civilized and built up location. So our third night, there's even more stuff when we get there. So we'll talk about that later.
Well, guys, that concludes day two of our Sock and Tie adventure. Please make sure to stay tuned for days 3 and 4 that are coming up.
As always, if you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe or follow it in your favorite podcasting app. If you're listening on Apple, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. That'd be really great, and it helps us grow. Make sure you have fun, stay hydrated, and stay safe as you wander into the woods.